It's another Friday afternoon, and you would not believe it, in my company today is
Laura Bear.
Laura, what do you do for a living? I can't really call it that, because we were talking previously about people who get into horticulture, and we were saying that essentially it's a little bit like being, is it fair to suggest, it's like starting in the music scene, isn't it? Like as a band, and you spend like a couple of years coming up through the ranks and being a bit broke.
Well, obviously not had much experience in the music industry, but in my imagination, yes, I would say that's probably it. I mean, I'm coming up to, I've just finished my first year of working on my own after finishing college and then working for someone freelance for a bit. And yeah, it's definitely ups and downs in terms of work, but it's been busy. It's been busy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
Is there a consistency? Well, okay, so I asked this question with a little bit, and then I kind of realised that there's a little bit of context, and now you're entering into somewhere in Peter's head, which is a place you don't really want to go. But I was talking to the guy who did your stone at Tatton Flower Show 2017, and we were talking about garden designers and garden designs and stuff that I was doing, and equally therefore that would relate to stuff that you would do. He was saying, well, is there a trend essentially in, or a style in what I would do? And I was saying, no, it's quite difficult to predict what garden you might be building in 6 months' time, never mind 6 weeks' time. Yeah. Is that a fair way to put that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things I really love are client briefs. And I know some people don't like that, but I really love client briefs. That's, for me, it, my design just comes from that. And I like to research a lot when I get an idea. And it might be researching art, it might be researching, in this case, for the Tatton one you were talking about, that was for a charity. And when I was researching them, it was, you know, ideas for that come from them. And they gave me loads of literature from people who've been helped by them, and you start that's where my ideas come from, is the brief, and I love that. So in terms of a trend, I never know what, because I never know what my next client's going to be. I don't know what they're going to want from their garden. Maybe you could say there's certain things I do which are similar. I have a certain style, and I that will probably evolve, but I'm not desperate to kind of fix a style for myself, or
So what I was on the verge of asking you what's your own garden like, and then I was afraid you'd throw the question back at me.
I can answer that.
Which is I'm not going to ask it, because I wouldn't ask myself. But let's go a slight bit differently on this one. You mentioned to me, I'll be very eloquent in saying this, but your daughter is older than my daughter.
Right.
And we'll just leave that one there in the age department. No disrespect. I gather, therefore, based on what you just said, that you weren't always involved in horticulture.
I had my daughter very early, which is why she is the age she is. No, she. I did history at university, and then I had my daughter, and I was at home with my two children and did various things, and then I studied law and was about to sort out a training contract, and just came home and went, I don't want to do this. I don't want to move into that kind of work. I love the subject of law, but I didn't. And I was just like, oh, I don't know, I'm never going to find what I want to do. And my husband said, you spend 10 hours in the garden and we have to drag you in when it's dark. Why don't you think about doing something like that? And it was the first time someone had actually said, yeah, go for something creative. Go for something that's not necessarily going to give you some kind of status, or, you know, in that sort of like academic status or whatever. I'd done a lot of academic work. I've met a gardener, and I went to work for her for a year, and I was cleaning up rose petals off the ground and raking lawns. And I just loved it. Ended up doing a garden at my kids' school, a wildlife garden, and it just all came from there. Did some RHS qualifications. Always said I was never going to be a designer. Always said I'm a gardener, I'm never going to be a designer. And then I just kept getting asked to design things, and I didn't know how to do it the way I wanted to really get it done. So I went off to London College garden design and worked the hardest for a year that I've ever worked in my life. So, but it's nice now I finished college, I can get more back to the plants as well.
there are a lot of people who will turn around to me who builds on the science gardens in Dublin and say, oh, it must be great to work in the great outdoors. There's a little mini me jumps out of me and goes up with a little rubber mallet and just, you know, taps them on the forehead with it very, very gently, I should say. So there's two arguments in my head, I guess, that I'm trying to put out. Not arguments, that's the wrong word. That almost lends to a negative. But one is that you've essentially, in your case I'm referring to, you've taken something that was your hobby and you've made it now something that you need to make money out of. Sure. Which is, maybe not as I always refer to it, but it is a little bit like trying to find the equation for, I guess, falling in love. And once you understand the equation, then, I guess, on the other hand, it becomes pointless. But in reality, you've got this bit where it can't be all it's cracked up to be when you've got 365 days of the year and a family to support and an ESB bill in the washing machine that sometimes breaks. Pause. Considering you used to work in law, which actually pays a little bit better, let's be honest about it. Yeah, yeah. Now, for those of you listening at home, I'm playing devil's advocate here, and that's obviously not how I see it, if that makes sense. Do you get what I'm saying, though?
I get what you're saying, but just to clarify, I never actually worked in law, so I've never given up that salary. I was studying, and I didn't even take that plunge and do the work. I did my degree, and I did the training. Anyway, but yeah, no, absolutely, it is. But, oh, I don't know, I'm becoming, the more and more I work, the more I just feel that these areas of work are just so undervalued that I'm determined to do it because, you know, I have a landscaper with apprentices and he's like, I'm trying to get them to see that this can be great if you really work at it, if you really progress it. And I think I mean, having spoken to people recently from like New Zealand and Australia, I feel like it's more valued. This kind of work is more valued, whether it's landscaping or good, but anything like with gardens is more valued there than it is here. And this career was never suggested to me ever. It's, you know, when you're at school, if you're at all good at academic work, you just assume that that's what you want to do. That's what you should do. And I probably should have realised earlier and been a bit more like, nah, I'm not going to do that. But it's taken a while, but I'm very glad I've got there.
I had one lady, and I used that word very eloquently. I had one lady say to me a long time ago, she said that when she changed from an office job, a very clerical office job, to horticulture and then garden design, she said it made her more feminine. And I thought it was a lovely way to put it. I didn't query whether it was a boardroom thing as would stereotypically be painted. I think what she was getting at was that she was just a little bit more herself and she was more of a woman or more of a lady or whatever that might be. And but I just thought it was a lovely way to say it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't really think about that kind of stuff. I think, actually, there are times, there's even been times this week during the build of a Dutton where I've had to get a bit tough when things aren't getting done. And that's, for me, probably people in different circumstances, but for me, I've never had to do that really before in work. So I've had to realise that there are times where I just can't be trying to be nice or to be wrong. I've actually got to say, I want this stuff cleared away, I want this finished, and that's, for me, I find that a challenge, but I'm starting to embrace that more than
but that's also what did my accountant tell me in the very early days of business? He said, Peter, you have to ask them for the money for doing the garden. And I said, Morris, yeah. I feel really bad asking them for it. And equally, on the other hand, I'd no problem telling the guys what to do because I've been in the industry all my life, if that makes sense. I evolved into it and evolved into those positions where for you, I understand it's slightly new, but I have an equivalent with you. And there's people around us, as by the way, they're talking away. We're not recording their phone calls. Did you do as a nipper? Were you a bit like me in that you always dabbled in the garden at 3, 4, 5 years of age. What was the first plant you ever grew? Do you remember that?
Well, I was brought up in Africa. I was born in West Africa in Burkina Faso, and then we lived in Zimbabwe until I was 10. And in Zimbabwe, we lived on kind of like a farm. It was after the War of Independence. Yeah. So we had all the... My father worked for Oxfam, and there was a project to reintroduce these guys who'd been soldiers for a long time into. And so we actually lived on a project where they were training them in agriculture. So I probably my first plants that I grew was maize, mealies.
Right.
So we had fields of mealies, but we had a vegetable garden, and we were just literally, I mean, we didn't wear shoes for 4 years apart from when we went to school, and we could just walk wherever we wanted, and we had all these people around us, and it was a very communal way of living. And so yeah, there was a vegetable garden, we grew everything, and yeah, I always loved it. And then I think teenagers, you lose that as I'm finding with my two, but it comes back. And actually I started growing things again when my kids were really little, and I wanted something to do at home that wasn't housework, because I was like, I'm not at home to just do housework and look after them. I'm you know, housework is not creative, it needs to be done, but it's nothing. And actually starting to grow stuff and just growing tomatoes with the kids or whatever was just a more creative thing to do. And it felt, and we were renting flats for years, and we used to move around, and our pots just got bigger, collection got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then finally we got our own garden. And yeah,
did that thing that you have, and I see sometimes it introduced into show gardens where it's like the brief has been given maybe by the show or the sponsor, yeah, to design a portable garden for a small space, that fact that you were, if I might use the word, transient, something that I did from about the age of 17 straight away through till almost 25, everything I had to fit into the boot of my car.
Yeah.
And it's a funny way to live where you own very little, essentially, or at least this I'm referring to myself here. When you got into, or when you designed small spaces, do you find that you thought about them a little bit different because you put yourself a little bit into it, rather than you were designing what you thought would look well within a small space? And that question, for those of you listening at home, it is intrinsically different when you have actually lived through it, rather than you walk in with fresh eyes and go, oh, this is what we should do here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Actually, I love designing small spaces, and that is, it's also just because I live in London, and I love the fact that, you know, they're just so important. Everyone has, I mean, I remember getting really excited because we had windowsills that you could put window boxes on in one flat when we were, and so, but it's a shame actually that you don't, I mean, people generally now who are renting, and that might change if the renting situation gets sorted out in this country a bit better. But I never get asked to design for people who are renting, even in a small way. I don't, you know, people are doing their sales, but it would be interesting to think about portable gardens. There's an idea of just a way that people could have something that they could take with them.
Let's go from portable gardens and let's go to the 2017 RHS Tatton Garden. What was that? And who was that for? And what was the design? For those of you listening in podcast, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/sideshow.com. I probably should have said that at the start of the show. You know, we've got a Google thing in the middle button on your phone. Just go click it and I'll put you directly in touch with Laura, and I'll pass you on, or she'll pass you on, some photographs of her garden. Right. If you want to press the middle button, you can do it now. The podcast should keep playing. Bring me there.
Well, it was, I was asked to pitch to Macmillan, who wanted someone to design a garden. Macmillan Cancer Support.
Okay.
And they are really keen. They wanted to promote the idea of legacy giving. So, because they get a third of their funding from gifts that people leave in their will. And it was a good brief, and I enjoyed doing the design, and they liked it, and I'm here. And it's... I wanted it to be really positive and kind of fun, even though it, because I think Will's I know from the law thing of things people generally ignore or don't necessarily want to think about. So I started off with that idea that when you're a kid and you put a copper in a wishing well and you make a wish, you really think that's going to come true. And that's really important and it's really exciting. And that was the starting point for the whole garden. So we've got this big Perspex wishing well. And it's the idea that when you leave a gift in your will, it's a positive thing. It's a hopeful thing. It's not anything. It's not something we shouldn't talk about. And so the whole design sort of comes from that.
I don't want to take away from Macmillan in any way. And I'm not. I promise you. Okay. Yeah, but for those of you listening at home, I'm down the pub with my friends and they're saying to me, well, what garden did you do today, Pete? And I say, oh, I designed a garden that's got a feng shui and it's got an ostrich and a giraffe and I've sellotaped two slices of butter toast to the side of it. Oh my God, wow, he's at it again. Yeah, yeah. And the other Peter on the left-hand side of me turns around and says, well, have you ever thought about making a will? And I apologise for in the way in which that came across. Sure. But did that change when the conversation around you, when you actually start, because to get into the zone of a brief when you're given that, bearing in mind it's at a show, it's at national level, medal which is nationally, internationally recognised, essentially the press days are there, the media are there, Chelsea, Tottenham, Hampton, Chatsworth, it doesn't matter. Once you do it well, very, very well on the grand stage, that's absolutely fine. However, if you do it the opposite way on a grand stage, you equally sometimes receive maybe more attention, if you get what I'm saying. So, yeah. But you're dealing with a tricky subject where you have to be to take it a little bit into the heart, but you also have to be a designer and come out of your shell and out of that zone ever so slightly a little bit. Was that a tricky one for you? My wry wit somewhere in there very much aside.
It's been absolutely terrifying, that side of it for me. Doing this has been, because when you do a garden for a client, you take your time, you can have as many conversations with them, you do it bit by bit, and then, you know, as the garden's being built, and even when it's finished, you can wait, you can take the photos at the right time, you can wait for things to develop. This is like, you've got your deadline, it's got to be there, it's going to be open, people are going to be taking photos from whatever angle they want, and your peers are seeing it. Your old tutors from college are seeing it, everything. And that, for me, was really... But I'm really glad I did that, because that's just another level of pushing myself this year, which has been great.
But you just hit the nail on the head there. I don't think I could have picked a sponsor and a brief that could have made you stretch yourself further than somebody like Macmillan, all of the great work and all of the stuff, and I saw the garden, and by the way, it was absolutely magnificent, and congratulations on it.
I was waiting to see what that was going to be.
Well, no, because as I said, essentially, and again, if you don't do it justice, if you don't achieve that bit of a medal, if it doesn't achieve it, it needs to step out of the boundary to achieve a little bit of PR, but it also needs to be sympathetic to the brief and the sponsor to do it justice.
Yeah.
If that's a fair way to put it. And it's a funny equilibrium. It's like trying to balance a seesaw. Yeah. Also in the middle of it, you've got the third thing, which is essentially you as the designer. You've got to be able to turn around and say, well, I'm proud of this and I did this, rather than I just fulfilled the brief. Again, as you rightly said, it's not a client's garden.
I'm really proud of it. I love it. And I actually think, you know, if you take out the extra aspects for Macmillan, the inscriptions or whatever, there are a lot of aspects of that garden that I would have in my garden, or I would design in that way with the shape of the curves or whatever. But I think with that, it was like there was a strong structure to it. There are things that Macmillan can, when they're there or the week of Tatton, they can point to and say, oh, look, this represents this, and it gives them something to talk about. But the planting, I hope, is something that will appeal to everybody, regardless of what the garden's about. It also tells the story, but it's, for me, the planting around the garden is that what I want people to look at as well and just go, yeah, I like that.
Do you think it's a case, and do you do it with your own gardens where you Okay, so Peter's head's gone off on a tangent again. But did you ever put on a pair of jeans and a T-shirt and you put on a pair of shoes and you look in the mirror and you go, God, I look like a flipping idiot. And you don't know why, but you wore the same clothes 3 weeks ago and you put them on that day and it's like as if they don't fit you properly and you haven't done anything different. And you feel like putting a match to the whole wardrobe and everything in it. And in garden terms, sometimes I arrange planting. And I have it set out in my head that it's going to go that way. And I put it out and I get the little people in my head get frustrated because it doesn't feel just right. I know the arrangement works. Mm. I knew the arrangement would work. And sometimes maybe it can be just the day or the feeling or the space or the place that you're in at that moment in time. In your garden, that Macmillan one, when I saw that, I went, she's... And it is that bit where you spot that girl on the far side of the bar and you go, gosh, she's gorgeous. If I don't, you know, it's, I was talking to Tim Hell about it earlier on, but you know, if I don't spend the rest of my life with her, I'm going to have itchy trousers. But when you fall out of love with that woman, all of those little things that make her what you fell in love with annoy you by individual. Your garden was very much for the grander and for the greater, and then I started to notice the stone and what I know now is the wishing well and the match between what was in the wishing well and also in the centre of the stone and then the planting. But as an overall space, it works. Do you design it, put it together, turn around and go, these clothes don't fit me properly, take a stand back, I've got these, and then trinkets, like, okay, now it's perfect. Do you get those? Do you do that?
It's very different planting a garden like that because literally...
Does that even make sense?
No, it does. It really does. But I'm placing each plant on that garden. Because when I'm doing a normal garden, I'm planting, they might not even be in flower. So it's all got to be worked out on my planting plans and I've got to work out all my heights, whatever. When I'm doing something like that, it's every plant does that plant. I've got the general scheme, but my old tutor, Andrew Fisher-Tomlin, when I've helped out with planting with him, it's constantly stand back, stand up, stand back, look at it. Every few plants, stand up, go back. And it's true. You're down there and you think you know what you're doing and you stand back. So yeah, it's really plant by plant. I mean, I set it all out and then, but even as I go through planting it, it's moving one thing slightly behind, turning it round. But that's why it's quite nice. It was a small space because it took quite a while.
Small spaces for me, when I did show gardens, and it's been a little bit since I did it, I essentially avoided the dip years. Got to make a go back to it at some stage of the game. But I actually found it easier to design and build the 20 by 10 metre spaces because I felt in my head that when you did a small space, that it was the intrinsic detail. I know it has to be there in the larger ones as well. I know that and I understand and I appreciate that. But the proportions are just on such a... And I get the argument, but do you see what I'm saying?
I understand, but I actually think... And in that garden, what I try to do, and it's something I do when I... Even at home, if I'm decorating a house, you have a small space, you don't scale everything down. You've got to be bold. You've got to... So like the wishing well is a metre diameter, and I could have put in a tiny wishing well, and I could have put in a smaller bench, and I could have put... But to have less things in it but have those things big actually makes the space feel more open and more so. Yeah, I guess, but you just add more of them in a bigger space. I don't know, maybe one day I'll find out what a bigger show garden is like to do, but at the moment I was very happy with that one. For my first one, I was very happy with the size of it, and I nearly scaled down some of those things at one point, and then I actually built a model at home. I was like, okay, Laura, just get out your little twigs and your poles and your cardboard and make that model and see what it looks like. Because however you draw it in CAD or you hand drew some of it, it doesn't, you don't get the sense of it. And I did that. I made the actual model and I was like, no, you've got to keep the wishing well that size. You've got to keep the bench that size. And yeah.
To put an Irish spin on this phrase, but did you wreck your friends' heads to the point of no return on your journey to Tatton 2017? I say that very eloquently.
They never want to hear those words again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to the whole area around Tatton Park, because none of my friends or family, apart from this week when they're coming to see the garden, will ever probably want to come near it, because, yeah, I have been quite obsessed. I think my daughter's been pleased because she's had her A-levels. And she said to me, "Oh, you know, other people's parents have been so stressed about their A-levels. You don't even know what days mine are on." And I thought, "Oh, but yeah, no, they. I think they've all had enough, but they'll get over it."
Okay, here's a random pop quiz, one word answers. Your favourite drink?
Vodka.
The last piece of music you bought?
Ed Sheeran.
Oh, jeez.
My son.
She just winked at me there when she said that. The last thing you did for fun that was not of gardens?
You see, there you go. That's my last few months. I can't think of the answer to that.
I've got no answer to that one either. The last good-looking person that you met from Ireland?
Oh, Peter.
That's me, by the way. I've got that on right now. I'm just joking. Okay. Your favourite food?
Curry.
Your favourite place to go on the planet if I said you had an unlimited budget?
Unlimited or limited? Unlimited. And if it was really safe, I would go back to Burkina Faso, where I was born, because I can't visit that because it's not safe. I'd love to go back there.
If I was to say you were allowed to bring the love of your life one place right now, this minute, where you know that he would end up lying on the ground, tickling his belly, laughing, ultimate happiness, essentially, where would that place be?
Kenya.
Would you end up lying on your belly, tickling yourself, laughing in Kenya? Would you?
Do you mean like just because it's a lovely place or what? No.
I meant like to the circus or something like that.
Oh, do you know what? I'd love to see Robin Williams at the height of his stand-up. That would be my... If I could go back to that.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that one.
Yeah, I've seen videos, but if I could have been there in some small club watching him do when he really did his crazy stuff, yeah.
I'd have taken Andy Kaufman in exchange for that one. What's next for Laura Bear?
I've got a bill to finish it. Back home, and then holiday, and then next year kind of just getting on, reassessing what I want, where I want to go with this. It's been a busy year.
Is 2018 going to be a good year for Laura?
Yes, definitely.
Is there another show garden in the pipeline?
I promised everyone in my family never, but they all knew I was lying. When you have changed my mind. I'm already in small discussions with someone.
Oh God, Laura Bear, it really has been an absolute pleasure. I've been watching your gardens pop up on my radar for a little bit of time now, and to see one of them in the flesh, it's just a real treat. When you get to talk to an absolute lady who's... You tend not to hide things. You tend to say, well, that's that and that's that. And this is how I see it. And sometimes that's not always the case. But it's been a real pleasure and a real treat. Thank you so much.
No, thank you very much, Peter. It's been an enjoyable morning.
Before we go, if people want to get in touch, how do they best do that? You're on the Instagram, Twitters, the webs and the whole lot?
LauraBear.com. And you just... My name, you can... Google it. It's easy.
BHR, that's LauraBehr. So, but if you're stuck for any of that, just send me a note at Sacha on Twitter, facebook.com/Sacha on Sacha.com, and we'll put you directly in touch with her. Take care. Have a great weekend on the ground floors. So on. Cheers. Bye bye.
Well, now we're dancing through the garden. And what a garden I have made. And now the death will grow my jasmine. I find it soothing, I'm afraid. And now there is no need for suspicion. No, there ain't no fraud kissing your hand. And I won't be lying when I tell you, oh no, that I'm a gardener, I'm a man in your eyes, babe.